You are listening to the Truth Frequency Radio Network.
No hate, no hype, no fear.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for tuning in once again to the radio show. My name is JD. We are live right now. This is, of course, the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast. We are coming to you on your very favorite network for truth and alternative information, Truth Frequency Radio. You can find us at truthfrequencyradio.com. You can find us at redpillreports.com. And you can find us on the dial at 90.7 under the beautiful skyline of Denver, Colorado. Today is Thursday, the 14th day of the 5th month of the 2015th year. If you're into the whole Gregorian calendar deal. But again, 14th of May today and a Thursday, or as I like to call it, Friday evening. I hope you guys are getting ready for a decent weekend out there. I got to tell you, the weather here in Missouri took a turn for the worse this morning. It is Seattle, dark and dismal, but that's okay because so many people hanging out with me already this morning in the chat room. I hope you guys got an opportunity to hear Jim Ram's show just now. That was live right before our show. What an amazing guy Jim is, man. I tell you what, absolutely astounding. All of the fantastic hosts that we have here at Truth Frequency Radio, and I am just tickled pink to be a part of this whole crew. Already have Johnny Whistles and Kev Baker in the chat room amongst a whole bunch of other local regulars, the guys and gals that show up every morning to go down this crazy rabbit hole with us as we try and figure out what's going on. Appreciate all of you guys showing up in the chat room. I do hope the feed is better today. We had a lot of troubles pretty much all the way through Joe Joseph's show last night. We had the electronic clippity-clop going on, and I know Chris was working on it, so I hope the feed is good today. Just give you guys a heads up. I did check out the archive from yesterday's show with Rebecca Roth, and it is crystal clear. So if you guys need to go back and listen to that program, please go ahead and download it, because that's pretty much the only way you're going to get it at this point. Also wanted to point out that what an amazing show KBS did last night. They had a caller on from Minnesota, and we got a major taste of the woo right in the middle of the week. And Johnny Whistles in rare form, Marty in rare form, and Kevin doesn't usually have to be in rare form because he's just that awesome all the time, and I just cannot tell you guys how much I loved listening to that yesterday. And even Joe's show was just absolutely outstanding too. So many great, great hosts on this network. Hope you guys are enjoying yourselves this morning. We have got a huge show for you guys today. Oh my goodness. First of all, Carl Ehrberger is going to be joining us in about an hour. What an amazing individual, ladies and gentlemen. He is an entrepreneur in the realm of hemp technology, and we'll talk a little bit about that today. I'm going to have him back on later, probably in the month or early next month, to talk about the hemp industry as it's taken off here in this country. But he's absolutely a scientist, and he has written this book called Secrets of Ancient America. I love this book, guys, and I'm telling you, when I come on the radio to tell you guys to look at a book, it's not because I make money off of it or, you know, am any way benefited by telling you guys about this, other than I want you guys to expand your libraries and have really good quality stuff in it. And, you know, one of my kind of pet peeves about this whole ancient aliens and ancient technology and elongated skulls is none of it happens here. It's all around us in, you know, the Middle East or Central and South America. But that's not true at all. There's so much happening here in the United States. There's so much physical evidence of lineage that does not have anything to do with Christopher Columbus. And so Carl, who is a scientist by nature, took a very scientific approach to this particular book, and I really can't recommend it highly enough. So I'm really looking forward to having him on the program a little bit later, and I hope you guys are looking forward to that too. And again, tomorrow, Andrew Gause is going to be joining us. He's a monetary historian and a numismatic expert. We've got a lot to talk about with gold right now. considering China is getting ready to come out and actually disclose how much gold they've got, and that could actually change quite a few things here economically. We've also had the story yesterday about the UN getting ready to meet here in the United States towards the end of September, and a lot of the things that they're trying to accomplish right now are economic in nature as well as, well, total control of everyone, really, fundamentally. But anyway, there are going to be some changes coming economically, and Andrew Gause is somebody that we really like to tap on the shoulder to come and talk to all of us about that. So I'm really looking forward to that. I just got to point out, too, first of all, let me say thank you, huge, huge thank you to a couple of people who made some donations yesterday to the radio show. We are working at keeping on the air here, and we are trying to be 100% listener-powered, and so far the listeners have stepped up huge. I got to give a major shout-out to Susan there in Korea. It's so nice to have listeners from overseas. Just makes me feel that much better that people are taking their time out of their schedule, even far, far away like Korea, to figure out what we're talking about here and the support we get from her, and also my good friend Dee coming through again on a second donation, guys. I mean, just absolutely amazing. Really can't appreciate you guys enough. And if you guys do want to help keep us on the air, we do have a GoFundMe going. You can look for it on the Red Pill Reports page. But I wanted to say also that in the midst of all of this that's going on, I've been really cautious about adding friends to my Facebook list, like my actual personal Facebook page. I have gotten so many friend requests from people who are friends of other hosts on the network and people who have just sought me out because of the radio show. I'm starting to build a friendship group on Facebook. Again, not people that I actually know, but of people that actually believe the same things that I do. And it's really cool. I really, really like it. And if you guys haven't gone and checked out the Facebook page at redpillreports.com, you should check that out too, because we're trying to get to 500 likes. That's kind of my big goal right now with that page. But really can't appreciate you guys enough who are supporting the page, who are supporting us on Facebook. I got a great email yesterday saying that how much people like the theme song. And that's great, because I've only had one person suggest that I change it, and a lot of people coming to me and saying, nope, that actually is an indicator to them now that it's time to go ahead and listen to the Red Pill. So that was kind of the whole point of that song, and I really, really appreciate that other people have seen that, and I think we're going to keep it for a while. So, okay, we have a lot to talk about today. Holy cow, I'm going to get off this little soapbox here right now. The world is still spinning. I've got major news coming out of America for sure. I've got probably the story of the week regarding Jade Helm. Guys, you guys will not believe this story regarding Jade Helm that I'm about ready to break here. But we're going to go through some international news quickly, and then we'll get into the national stuff. Again, Carl Lehrberger will be joining us here in about an hour. Really, really excited about this show, and really appreciate all of you guys hanging out with us in the chat room. I mean, wow, 17 already this morning. Absolutely amazing. Okay. International front, going to the war situation. Obviously, the situation outside of Yemen right now is still very tenuous. Yesterday, a senior Iranian commander actually warned the United States that it might start a fire over an aid ship that is bound for Yemen. The ship is supposed to get to Yemen today. And so Iran basically is stepping up, saying the United States doesn't have our permission to inspect this ship. Okay. And the United States is essentially saying they would rather this ship go across the channel there, across the Strait of Hormuz to Djibouti, which a place where they have set up a UN humanitarian distribution center. So, I mean, how much could you possibly trust a UN, you know, set up distribution center? I couldn't trust it, and I don't imagine that Iran would trust it either. But anyway, that's essentially what's going on right now. There is allegedly an aid ship, going to Yemen. It is a Iran chartered boat, and Iran is basically saying there's no way that they're going to allow the United States to inspect this vessel. So what's going to happen? Well, it's going to be a flashpoint, and it might end up actually getting set off later today. So we're going to have to keep a close eye on that for sure. But again, Pentagon said yesterday it was tracking the aid ship. It is called Iran Shahed, after a naval commander told state media that Tehran will be sending warships now to escort it all the way to Yemen. So you can see the situation there in Yemen still getting pretty crazy by the hour, and we'll have to keep an eye on that. Also, huge news coming out of the Vatican yesterday, and this is something I fully, fully, fully support. The Vatican officially recognized the state of Palestine yesterday in a new treaty that was finalized yesterday. This immediately obviously sparked the ire of Israel, and Israel come out and accused them of hurting the peace process by doing this. So anyway, this treaty concerns the activities of the Catholic Church in Palestinian territory, and it makes clear that the Holy See has now switched its diplomatic recognition to the Palestinian Liberation Organization, from the Palestinian Liberation Organization to the State of Palestine. So this agreement aims to enhance the lives and the activities of the Catholic Church and its recognition at the judicial level. And this is according to the Vatican's deputy foreign minister. And the Vatican had welcomed this decision by the UN General Assembly back in 2012 to recognize a Palestinian state. But this particular treaty is the first legal document negotiated between the Holy See and the Palestinian state and does constitute now an official recognition. This is a really big deal, and as far as I'm concerned. Of course, Israeli's foreign minister came out, said they were disappointed by the development. They said this move does not promote peace or the peace process, and it also distances the Palestinian leadership from returning to a direct and bilateral negotiation. So Israel goes on to say they're going to study this agreement and consider what steps to take accordingly. And that's really irritates me, because obviously declaring the state of Palestine as a sovereign entity moves us towards peace on a global level. So the fact that Israel would come out and say, well, this is moving us away from peace, obviously shows you just how headstrong Israel actually is, and maybe they have a little bit of a fuzzy idea on what peace actually is. But to me, and say what you will about the Vatican, we can obviously go down that road, but the fact that another major country out there, the Vatican is a country, recognizes the state of Palestine as a state is it's a good move, guys, and I'm really excited about that. Okay, let's talk about China here for just a second. China doing a really big move here. They are now going to ensure, and this is an announcement they made yesterday, that all public areas are being covered with video surveillance cameras by 2020. They are saying this is supposed to fight crime, ensure stable stability, and again, the government came out and said all of this just yesterday. And China has already taken a series of measures to prevent attacks by extremists, including plans for an anti-terrorism law that would give the government broader surveillance powers and offering to pay for tips about violent plots. Places such as roads will be fully covered by cameras, and information they gather will be shared with the authorities, the country's top economic planner, and the National Development and Reform Commission. The plan, according to China, is to enhance public security monitoring, optimize traffic conditions, and here's the big one, improve social management. That's a big deal here. As part of this clampdown, last month, the government said it was going to establish a national population database linked to ID information and credit cards. And this particular article drops off right there, but what we were talking about, we actually brought this up, I think about a week ago. They're putting together a social scoring system, right? So it's going to be like a credit score, but it has to do with the things that you post on social media, who your friends are, what kind of jobs you've had in the past. And they're going to use this social media score basically to control your entire life if you're there in China. You know, it's going to basically allow you to have access to the internet. You can just see how the draconian control measures that are going on in China right now are getting absolutely out of control. So again, looking for total public surveillance by 2020, and then all of that information is going to be fed into some sort of database that will probably be tied into this social scoring mechanism. Good thing it could never happen here in the United States, right? Oh, speaking of that, David Cameron, talking to all you UK kids out there, David Cameron announced yesterday new plans to curb extremist activity and radical hate preachers in his new government's first state opening of parliament. This is commonly known as the Queen's speech. So the Prime Minister will tell the National Security Council the new measures will give police power to go to the High Court and request orders to prevent harmful activities, quote-unquote harmful activities, of individuals who, quote-unquote, threat to the functioning of democracy, ladies and gentlemen. That is a pretty broad statement right there. And these orders have now been received under the new Tory administration after the original plans were vetoed by the Liberal Democrats back in March of 2014 when they were in coalition. But now the measures are supposed to be focusing on reducing the presence of those who incite hatred against gender, race, or religion on social media and print. So now you're also here targeting Facebook against people who are exposing harmful activities. And they even go on further. They say these people are going to be targeted if they are perpetrating harmful activities for the purpose of overthrowing democracy. Pretty sure that includes yours truly, because I don't believe in democracy. I believe in republics. And of course, you know, UK kids, you guys have got a much different issue right there because you don't have sovereignty as individuals. You guys have a monarchy and they're the only people who are sovereign and actually have rights from God. That's how the government, as far as I can tell, is set up over there. But again, if you're somebody who speaks out about the lunacy of democracy in the UK, holy crap, guys, you guys are screwed. And I wonder how far reaching that's going to be, because obviously social media doesn't all just originate in the UK. It exists everywhere. So are we talking about a global censorship program here, or are we talking about targeting people who might have the audacity to speak out against democracy? That's exactly what they're trying to put into effect here. I'll even go further. Here's what David Cameron said. He said, "For too long, we have been a passively tolerant society, saying to our citizens, as long as you obey the law, we will leave you alone." It's often meant that we have stood neutral between different values, and that's helped foster a narrative of extremism and grievance. So the government will conclusively turn the page on this failed approach. Again, this failed approach saying to the citizens that as long as you obey the law, we'll leave you alone. Yeah, that was apparently a failed approach. So they're going to be conclusively turning the page on that failed approach. And as the party of one nation, he says, we will govern as one nation and we will bring our country together. And that means actively promoting certain values, which means if your values don't concise or concede with what their values are, boom, you are now a target. So I'm telling you right now, this is a slippery slope that just got exposed here in the UK. And anybody over there, I got an extra bedroom if you guys want to come here stateside. I don't know if you'd want to come here stateside. I mean, really, to be perfectly honest, but it's here for you if you guys need it. Also, yesterday, the European Union's executives proposed taking in 20,000 of these migrants over the next 2 years and distribute them across Europe. We touched on this a little bit yesterday, but we had talked about the fact that the actual plan wasn't going to come out until last night. So we're just kind of going through the plan right now. Britain, already one of the largest members of the EU, completely opted out of this. And Italy and southern European countries right now are clamoring for the EU to help deal with this influx, while Germany, Italy and Austria are backing up this quota system. Some other EU states are opposed, Britain being one of them. Denmark and Ireland all have exemptions on matters concerning asylum, immigration, visas, and external border controls based on protocols agreed to in the EU's Lisbon Treaty. And Denmark and Ireland have yet to comment on the plan at all. But under this scheme, based on a country's size, economic output, and some other matrices, Germany would take the most migrants, followed by France and Italy, assuming that Britain doesn't change its stance coming up in the next few days here. And hours before the plans were made public, the British Interior Minister Theresa May criticized the EU's approach, saying that by not sending economic migrants back, man, I want to slap her in the face right now. These people are not economic migrants. I'm sorry, I'm kind of wound up today, guys. It's the coffee coursing through my veins. But these are people who are leaving war-torn regions because of imperialist nations similar to, I don't know, Britain. So Miss Theresa May coming out and saying, we should just send these people back to where they came from. Inexcusable to me. Absolutely inexcusable and disgusting. So anyway, about 1,800 of these poor refugees have died in the Mediterranean already this year, and the UN Refugee Agency says that some 51,000 have already entered Europe by sea, with 30,000 of them coming via Italy, and they're all fleeing war and poverty in Asia, Africa, and the Middle East. Most of them are traveling to Europe through Libya, which has obviously descended into chaos for nearly 4 years after the fall of Muammar Gaddafi. But anyway, Britain wants the EU to do more to target people smugglers in Libya. Again, Britain now pushing anti-humanitarian issues and saying we should just basically destroy these boats as they're leaving Libya, even though they have just as much of a role in the destruction of Libya as the United States does. But again, looking for it's just crazy to me. Just crazy to me. And I feel bad for all of you guys in the UK right now. But again, we need to address this issue on the ground up front, with, you know, exposing the fact that we're part of the problem that is, you know, making these people leave their land. So maybe we should do something about fixing the problem as opposed to coming up with military solutions to keep them there. Just unbelievable. Here's something else unbelievable. This story is coming out of North Korea. A lot of executions going on in North Korea right now. Kim Jong-un has executed actually 15 senior officials just this year as punishment for challenging his authority, according to the NIS. And in all, some 70 officials have been executed since Kim overtook his father's death in 2011. But this is a big one, guys. The North Koreans and Kim Jong-un himself executed its defense chief, listen to this, by putting him in front of an anti-aircraft gun at a firing range. This is, I swear to God, this really happened. They put this poor gentleman on a platform in front of an anti-aircraft gun, in front of thousands of witnesses, and they executed him via anti-aircraft gun. I mean, holy cow. That's pretty insane. Makes you wonder just how absolutely mental Kim Jong-un actually is. But apparently this gentleman had disobeyed one of Kim's orders and had fallen asleep at an event at which Kim was present. So I guess the guy didn't like the fact that he fell asleep. So Kim Jong-un killed him with an anti-aircraft gun in front of a whole bunch of witnesses, like thousands of people seeing this. So there you go. Unbelievable to me that that's what's going on. Here's some good news for you guys. I want to give this quick shout out. We've been talking about Monsanto, and since this is kind of an international front, effective immediately, all importation of glyphosate/Roundup will be notified that the approval for all glyphosate products has been suspended, and this suspension is coming from the Bermuda Minister of Health. So the nation of Bermuda now is absolutely, as of right now, suspending all importation of glyphosate/Roundup until further research can be done to prove that it's actually safe. And I really like that. So congratulations to the people of Bermuda. And what's really interesting is that it's actually the Minister of Health who made this particular proclamation. So isn't that amazing? I thought don't we have somebody, I think he's like a surgeon general, or isn't there like a head doctor in our country that's supposed to care about stuff like this? Why is it that the Minister of Health in Bermuda can figure this out so aptly, and yet here in the United States, we're just spraying everything. It's all over the stores. I don't know. Also, quick little update from Tokyo right now regarding Toyota and Nissan. They announced yesterday a big time expansion of the car recall that they have been going on for a while, revolving around these Takata airbags. So again, Japanese automakers Toyota and Nissan yesterday added 6.5 million vehicles worldwide to the tally of those deemed to contain potentially dangerous components. By dangerous components, they mean that when the Takata airbag goes off in your car, once in a while, it'll just spray you with shards of metal. So not really a good thing if you're trying to save somebody's life. So again, at least 6 deaths have been related to these Takata airbags, and now it sounds like Toyota and Nissan are stepping up, and it also sounds like Honda may also be stepping up with some recalls. So if you guys have a newer Toyota or Nissan, might be a good day to get in touch with your dealer and find out exactly, if you guys need to bring your vehicle in or not. Getting one report that the sound is kind of going in and out. Are you guys doing okay out there in the chat room? Just want to check. Make sure you guys have good sound out there. Let's jump into some national news as well here. Obviously, the big story right now is this train wreck that happened in Philadelphia, and a lot of details are starting to come out about this. First and foremost, it appears that that train was traveling at more than 100 miles an hour through that sharp curve where it derailed, and the speed limit in that sharp curve is actually only 50 miles an hour. So it was traveling almost twice the speed that it was supposed to. There's also new indicators out now that the engineer who was operating the train did apply the full emergency braking system moments before the derailment. And there's also another story, and this is not related. They were kind of mixed up yesterday on Drudge, but a Philadelphia commuter train was actually hit by a projectile that broke the engineer's window. And this was about 20 minutes before the Amtrak train derailed. And it, again, a different train, but it happened only about 3.5 miles away from where this derailment took place. So there's that incident to put into your mix as we try and mix all of this stuff up together. But again, the train was traveling stupidly fast around this curve. We've already kind of gone over the damage and the injuries and all of that stuff. They are recovering and analyzing the black box. They say it's too early to speculate on the accident, but I was thinking about a movie M. Night Shyamalan made called Unbreakable. I don't know if you guys have seen that. It's got Samuel L. Jackson and Bruce Willis in it. And one of the things in that movie that Samuel L. Jackson does as kind of this evil doer terrorist guy is he goes and he messes around with a train that gets it to the point where the engineer cannot control it. And this to me seems very unusual that train was traveling so quickly and the engineer was aware of it, unable to stop it. And it just seems very unusual to me, given the fact that a projectile, we don't know what that was, but hit a commuter train, not just 3.5 miles away, and also at the same time, just very unusual circumstances regarding this particular plane or particular train crash. And also, it needs to be pointed out that back in 2003, the FBI had actually issued a warning about terrorists attacking trains. And one of the things that they talked about, and this was actually first published by ABC News back in 2003, talking about a bunch of derailers that is a piece of railroad equipment used to derail train cars for safety purposes in railway yards, right? Nine of them had been stolen back in 2003, and obviously very strange in terms of theft because there's not a lot of use for them outside of the rail industry. So again, very unusual, this situation that happened in Philadelphia, and obviously our thoughts and prayers are with the family members of those who passed away in that tragic incident. But I think there's a lot more to this than we are being told right now. And again, I come back to that movie Unbreakable. It seems unusual that that a train would go that fast and not be that the engineer would not recognize the warning signs of going that quick. That seems really unusual. And again, he did apply the full emergency braking system and to no avail. Okay, let's talk about Jade Helm right now. I am very surprised that nobody else has mentioned this yet because this is a huge story and this broke last night. I'm floored by this, guys. You guys want to talk about whether or not we're winning this Jade Helm thing? I'm telling you right now, we're winning this Jade Helm thing. And this story makes me wonder if a certain other internet group, we'll call them the fringy elements, looking at Wilcox and looking at Fulford, I'm starting to think maybe those guys were right. And I've got to break it to you. We're going to a 3-minute break right now. So you guys are just going to have to sit there and wonder what in the heck I'm talking about. But I'm telling you, when I come back from this break, we're going to give you guys some story backline on this Jade Helm thing and about what is going on in the state of Colorado, and it is absolutely going to floor you guys. So keep it here. We're going to go to this break. We do have to talk about this Jade Helm thing. There have been more military equipments spotted around Texas, and they're getting more serious. The things that we're starting to see buried off in the woods, getting more serious, guys. We also have a TPP update. Remember, the Senate stopped the fast tracking. Yeah, they didn't stop the fast tracking. They came back late last night, undid the stopping of the fast tracking. So we're going to have to talk about TPP here in just a few minutes as well. Lots more to talk about, guys. Keep it right here. 3-minute break. I love all of you. Thank you guys for being in the chat room. We're going to be right back. I know. I'm a tease. I can live with that. So can you. We'll see you guys in a minute.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Big business has discovered the preparedness market, and that makes it difficult to know where to go and who to trust. MyPatriotSupply.com is owned and operated by patriots just like you, has the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more. MyPatriotSupply.com has old-fashioned values and the absolute best customer service in the industry. Look for the deal of the day, unique, affordable survival supplies that fit anyone's budget. Get same-day shipping on all orders and free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927, 866-229-0927, or visit MyPatriotSupply.com for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence. Shop with a name you know and a name you can trust. Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule I drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
Sound Doctrine Ministries with Kenneth Emmanuel. Sundays on True Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys so much for hanging out with us through that 3-minute break. I absolutely love having you guys all in the chat rooms right now. Are we having some sound problems today? I'm not sure what's going on out there. I'm getting a little bit of feedback from the chat room. Hopefully this is not going to be the same as yesterday. But, you know, we all muddle through, and I'm sure Chris is working behind the scenes as fast as he can to try and figure out what's going on if there is an issue. Sorry about that, guys. Nothing I can do about it from my end. Hopefully, Chris is in the loop and working on it, guys. But I will try and speak slowly and enunciate so you guys are not going to miss anything, because this story about Jade Helm is absolutely huge. And obviously, all of us have been very concerned about what is going on with this Jade Helm issue. And now, conspiracy theorists, we all basically have about 6 months to try and figure out what is going on. And several militias and patriots who've been monitoring this Jade Helm 15 exercise, there's a really significant move here now by Colorado, guys. Colorado announced last night that the troops that were going to participate are no longer available. They are pulling out as a state from Jade Helm. They are not going to be participating as a state in Jade Helm. This is a super big piece of news here, guys. One of the generals with the Phoenix Militia states that it's very troubling imagining NORTHCOM and NORAD, who have been conducting Homeland Security since 9/11 at NORAD, they have been excluded from this exercise. That is why Colorado is pulling out, because NORAD and NORTHCOM were not in the loop on Jade Helm. So you guys stop for just a second and think about this. We're talking about the largest military organization and logistics operation in the country with NORAD. NORAD is in charge of Homeland Security and have been such since 2002. And for some reason, they were not included in the planning behind this Jade Helm thing. So again, they are pulling out as a state. This is mind-boggling, guys, because the Phoenix Militia Commander states that if disasters, extremists, and cyber attacks aren't prevalent to the martial law, which is obviously the basis for the Jade Helm exercises, what in the world is the primary goal here, guys? How can you have six states exercising on martial law without the nation's best and biggest logistics and command center participating? That makes no sense. And now local media in Colorado are reporting that Colorado is not going to participate in the exercise. NORAD and NORTHCOM also have huge law enforcement roles, as well as federal military roles. And the old ENT, or NORAD, has a primary goal to protect the United States and Canadian airspace and maritime defense. But today, the role of NORAD is much broader and also includes Homeland Security, countering transnational criminal networks, and also stopping smugglers and other activities. It's very safe to say that NORAD is the nerve center for monitoring superstorms, cyber attacks, domestic and foreign terrorist attacks. To say Colorado is excluded from any of this activity, training or otherwise, is nonsense. Colorado is the nerve center for martial law if and ever it were to be ordered on a mass scale. In the East, the West, or both, NORAD will be there, guys. So what in the world is going on that NORAD was not in the loop on this Jade Helm training, to the point where they're upset enough about it that they are pulling back their own troops? This really makes me wonder, and I hate to say it, if maybe Benjamin Fulford and his little buddy David Wilcox are correct. I don't think we're going to see a bunch of, you know, white, red, or blue ninjas, you know, black, dragon ninjas coming onto the scene here, but this does lead me to believe that there was something different going on here with this Jade Helm thing. And I tell you what, the fact that Northcom and NORAD have come out and said that they're not going to be doing anything with this, that makes you have to now wonder who's organizing the Jade Helm, who's actually running that show if it's not Northcom and not NORAD. That blows my mind. And again, another state, we've already seen a couple of cities inside of Texas withdraw their support. So again, I think we're cracking this whole Jade Helm thing apart. And I think the more attention we draw to it, the less likely they're going to be successful in pulling off whatever it is they're trying to pull off. But the fact that NORAD was not involved, that should make the hair on the back of your neck stand up, guys. That's a big, big deal. Big, big deal. Red Linky in the chat room saying it's a UN thing, which does make a lot of sense. But again, you know, we have we have people who have taken oaths that work for the military, and that oath is to protect the American people from foreign and, you know, national threats. And the UN right now looks pretty clearly like a national threat at this point. So perhaps there's more going on here with this Jade Helm thing than we know about, but again, just wanted to put that out. Colorado pulling completely out of Jade Helm because NORAD not in the loop, which does not make any sense whatsoever. So anyway, that's what's going on. Also, Special Forces out of Fort Bragg were seen training with SWAT officers in Richland County, South Carolina this week for house-to-house raids, which is probably, for all of us, another unnerving sign of the militarization of domestic law enforcement. And these were late night pre-dawn exercises. They involved the 3rd Special Forces Groups out of Fort Bragg, North Carolina. They've been running since May 8th and they will conclude on Friday. So just as you're trying to give you guys a heads up, if you're in the lower Richland County area, you guys have all been warned that you may encounter military vehicles and or hear ordnances being set off or shots fired in the streets. So again, just more militarization and more. Why are they training for house-to-house raids, guys? I mean, seriously, why are Special Forces training local law enforcement there in South Carolina for house-to-house raids? Not a good sign. Unless they're really the good guys and they're going to go house-to-house raid on all these bankers and corrupt politicians and just basically destroy the cabal. I don't know. Also, we had the story yesterday of the Humvees showing up at the closed-down Walmart in Texas. There has been another video that has surfaced, fairly interesting, and this time a gentleman was on some back roads in Texas, also kind of near that Walmart, and he discovered a contingency of M270 rocket launchers. They are all out in the open. They're behind barbed wire fences, and they are sitting out in the field again near Texas. Why do we need M270 rocket launchers? M270 rocket launchers are a big deal, guys. If you want to destroy a large area in a very short amount of time, that's the system you're going to use. So why are these things being staged on back roads near Texas amidst this Walmart Jade Helm military buildup? I don't know, but again, that's what's going on. Got to start praying that there are some good people running the show right now, and maybe those guys at NORAD are not them. Who knows? Also, we had this story yesterday about the TPP and the fast track basically falling apart yesterday because a whole bunch of Democrats voted against Barack Obama. Well, they changed all that last night. They basically came back and said, yeah, we're going to go ahead and fast track this. So I don't know what Obama did or who kind of, you know, what kind of strings he had to pull. But they are now fast tracking this TPP thing. So we're going to have to start keeping a pretty close eye on this. Not a good thing at all. I'll get away from that. Also, some new details of the alleged Osama bin Laden raid have now come out, and a journalist whose mainstream is named Seymour Hersh, he actually published a report now questioning whether or not the official story was true. I really like his report because he still, he basically goes on to poke fun at the White House, saying the White House still maintains that this mission was an all-American affair and that the senior generals of Pakistan's Army and Inter Services Intelligence Agency were not told of the raid in advance. He goes on to say that's completely fake. And, you know, really it's unusual because Hersh goes on to talk about how bin Laden was essentially captured back in 2006 and used as a bargaining chip. But there's a lot of people who believe that he was dead back in 2011. So it's really difficult to say what actually happened. But regardless of what's actually going on with the bin Laden story, the fact is that the official story is starting to come unglued. And we do like that around here. Anytime we can expose truth, big fan of that. And I got to give another shout out here to a mother in West Virginia. She's a mother of a middle schooler who was suspended for wearing an NRA t-shirt to school. and she is now suing the Logan County Board of Education for allegedly violating her son's constitutional rights. Her name is Tanya Ladieri, and she filed a lawsuit on behalf of her son, Jared Markham, who was charged with disrupting the educational process and obstructing an officer back in 2013 when he refused to turn his NRA t-shirt inside out. And those charges of disrupting the educational process and obstructing an officer, they were all dismissed by a judge, but Markham was still forced to serve a one-day suspension for his quote-unquote defiance. And the shirt was an unalarming olive-green t-shirt bearing the NRA logo, which is the letters NRA in black, the words protect your right, and an image of a hunting rifle. So the lawsuit hereby names several school board members, the school district superintendent, as well as the principal, a teacher, and staffers there. So Gore actually enlisted the help of teacher David Borroway. I'm sorry, let me go back to the beginning here. Basically, Markham was physically stopped by a school secretary who placed her hand on his chest, stopping him from proceeding down the hall, and advised him that his shirt violated the school's dress code and instructed him to turn the shirt inside out or face suspension. This particular secretary, Gore, enlisted the help of a teacher, David Borroway, who also agreed that the shirt violated the dress code and hauled this young man off to the principal's office by his arm, according to the lawsuit. And the teen was later charged with obstruction of justice because an officer had asked him to stop speaking, and he continued. He says, when the police came, I was talking and telling them that this was wrong and that they cannot do this. It's not against any school policy. The officer told me to sit down and be quiet, and I said, no, I'm exercising my right to free speech. And he says, I did it calmly. And this teen, who is now an NRA member, I would appreciate more if he was a Gun Association of America member, but hey, whatever. He now attends Logan High School. The family's lawsuit is seeking $200,000 in compensatory damages and also $250,000 in punitive damages for alleged violations of Markham's First and 14th Amendment rights. It also states that the shirt did in fact comply with county and school dress code policies against violating or against violent or threatening images, according to court documents cited by the media. So Markham, the young man, goes on to say he was very surprised. It shocked him to find out that the school did not know their own dress code and their own policies. And he says, I figured that they would have known not to call me out on that shirt because there's nothing wrong with it. And he also goes on to say that the only disturbance was caused by the teacher when the teacher raised his voice. So good on this young man for standing up for his rights. It's wearing a t-shirt in a school, obviously not a violent or, inflammatory style t-shirt. But there's going to be a lawsuit there, and I believe that kid's going to win. And I'll tell you what, this is the exact reason that God has not blessed me with children, ladies and gentlemen, because God does not want me to go to jail. And if my child comes home and tells me that a person wearing a costume put their hands on him, all bets are off. I mean, there's not going to be a lawsuit unless I'm going to be in jail for murder, because I'm not going to tolerate that happening to my children. So again, probably the reason God has not blessed me with children as far as where we are at right now. Let's get into some economic news right now. Happy days are here again. We are at 18,205 on the Dow, guys, up 145 points today. Go team. So excited to be a part of it all. S&P up also 13 points today, above 2,100 at 2,108. Dollar index still taking a little bit more of a dive today. Not really a great sign, 93.78. Let's check out what is going on with the euro. Pretty flat right now. We're at 113.51, and the Bitcoin is down right now about 1.5% at 238.27. Checking out the commodities right now. Gold up an additional $4 today, well above the $1,200 mark. $1,222.70. Silver also following suit, up more than a percent this morning. $17.43 will get you a bright shiny ounce of silver. And your crude oil down more than a percent and a half this morning at $59.58. Truth is at a wine convention right now. Truth be told, one of our very, very favorite people who joins us in the chat every day. And he, for some reason, has got the magical crystal ball of the only BDI feed that actually works on the planet. I don't know where he's found it, and he keeps it to himself because that's why we love him. But he told me that the BDI was currently up about 3 points this morning, sitting squarely at 637. So that is what is going on in the broader markets right now. Let's find out what else is going on. I got to tell you, we've been talking about the war on cash. We've been talking about the potential economic shift that's getting ready to take place. And HSBC's chief economist, Stephen King, came out yesterday with some pretty significant statements talking about how they at HSBC are already considering the next recession. And spoiler alert, guys, as of the charts that I saw yesterday on Zero Hedge, the United States is in a recession right now. There is absolutely no question in anyone's mind we are fully in a recession. But anyway, in these client notes that he put out yesterday, Mr. Stephen King, not the author, but the HSBC chief economist, warns that the world's economy is like an ocean liner without lifeboats. And he says if another recession hits, it would be truly a titanic struggle for policymakers. And this is what he actually said. He says, whereas previous recoveries have enabled monetary and fiscal policymakers to replenish their ammunition, this particular recovery, both in the U.S. and elsewhere, has been distinguished by a persistent munitions shortage. This is a major problem. In all recessions since the 1970s, the United States Fed was able to raise their rates by a minimum of 5% points, and this kind of traditional stimulus is now completely ruled out. So King notes that this far into the recovery, there is a lack of traditional policy ammunition. For instance, treasury yields have not risen. The budget deficit has not fallen, and welfare payments are still on the rise. And he goes on to highlight four different things that he believes could be the trigger mechanisms for this next recession. He says wage growth will hurt corporate earnings and reduce the share of corporate profit contributing to the U.S. gross domestic product. It also doesn't help that worker productivity is an all-time low right now. And in turn, households and businesses will lose confidence in the economy and the equity bubble will burst with the collapsing of stock prices. Number two, he says non-bank financial systems such as insurance companies and pension funds will increasingly not be able to meet future obligations. This will cause a huge demand for liquid assets, forcing people to rush to sell despite no matching demand, again, potentially triggering a recession. He says number three, forces beyond the Federal Reserve's control, including the possibility that China's economy and its currency could collapse. I think that's not going to happen, but again, it's a possibility. So he says that weak commodity prices could also cause collapses in several emerging markets, and that could obviously change the strength of the U.S. dollar. So there's another indicator. And the Fed could also cause the next recession by raising interest rates too soon. I think there's absolutely no way, shape, or form that the Fed is going to come out and raise interest rates anytime soon. I think Peter Schiff nailed it last week when he said it's much more likely that we're going to see quantitative easing number four, and I absolutely, completely, 1,000% agree with that. So anyway, also news out of China right now, the Chinese economy has slowed down even more in April as fixed asset investments, which are a crucial driver of its activity, is again losing pace. This is dropping to levels not seen since the year 2000, also adding concerns that the country's goal to reach 7% growth in 2015 is becoming unfeasible. This new data published yesterday shows that investment growth increased by 12% in the first 3 months of the year from earlier, but it also marked its slowest pace of increase in 15 years. The money supply growth slowed to 10% year over year, and banking in China also showed very poor results as earnings grew slowly and the amount of bad loans actually increased. So banks made only 708 billion yuan worth of new loans last month, and that is a fifth less than expected. So again, China's economy starting to slow down, and if you understand that they are an engine for the economic industry in the world, that's a pretty big statement. Speaking of big statements, here's another guy, Jim Leavis. let me figure out who this guy actually is. I think he works in Denmark and he's part of this whole moving away from cash thing, but he had a pretty substantial statement yesterday. And of course he's in a suit and has a pretty face, so he's on TV and people believe him. But his comment yesterday says forcing everyone to spend by only electronic means from an account held at a government-run bank would give the authorities far better tools to deal with recessions and economic booms. That's what this guy's saying. So again, the war against cash, you can see, is ramping up because these people don't have enough control right now over the economy as it stands, and they don't want us having cash. They don't want you guys being able to barter outside. I'd start growing marijuana if it was me, guys, and just get in front of this curve, have something to barter with. Little bitty bottles of booze, I guarantee that Anthony Gauss will back me up on that as well. Also, just as a side note, Obama's energy regulations are going to cost Americans $460.5 billion over the next several years between that's what it's already cost us between 2009 and 2014. I won't get into too much detail on that because there are a lot of other things going on. But again, we have already spent $460 billion with a B on all of these environmental things that Barack Obama is starting to do. The avian flu, we'll kind of get over into some health news here in just a second, but on an economic front, this outbreak of avian flu, a lot of experts are calling it the worst in U.S. history now. It has claimed more than 32 million birds in 16 states, and it's starting to take its toll at the grocery store as well. A carton of eggs here in the Midwest, where the disease has had the largest impact, jumped 17% in the last month, according to the Associated Press. And turkey prices, which were expected to fall this year, have actually risen between 3 and 10%. And you're also going to feel the pinch when you're buying things like processed foods that have eggs as ingredients, like cake mix and mayonnaise and things like that. So again, price of eggs in our region, 63% rise in the last 6 weeks, according to a commodity market analyst there. So this bird flu thing is going to start hitting people in the pocketbooks here pretty quickly. One other little indicator here right now, the Atlanta Fed, the Federal Reserve of Atlanta, just cut its second quarter GDP forecast again, this time from 0.7 down from 2.7 down from 0.8%. This is against the on the back of the quarter one GDP, which as of this moment is still around -1% right now. So again, this means that the consensus will once again have to scramble and consult the Oracle Stone in order to try and figure out what is going on at the Atlantic Fed. And it also means that the first half of US GDP will be negative, and all else being equal, it would suggest a technical recession. Again, we are in a technical recession right now here. It also means that for 2015's full year GDP to print at a growing 2.5%, that's what they're hoping for, the economy will have to grow at 5% or higher in both Q3 and Q4. Good luck with all that. So again, also another indicator, U.S. retail numbers are way, way down again this month, basically another 0.9%. So year over year growth down as low as it's been since November of 2009. So there you go. That's what's going on in the economy here in the United States. Good times. Love to hear it. Okay, we're still having a little bit of feed issues, guys, and I really do apologize about that, but I'm sure Chris is working behind the scenes. Let's get into some science and tech stuff here real quick. We talked a little bit about the ISIS threat of hacking and them potentially declaring some kind of global electronic war against the United States, and anybody who's anti-ISIS, you kind of have to wonder if this is just rhetoric to be ramped up just in case we have some kind of, I don't know, cyber attack that wipes out the economy here in the United States. Now they already have a key person to blame that on. What else do we want to talk about? I'm going to just kind of jump through some of this stuff here really quick. There's a really interesting story coming out of Australia right now. Researchers apparently have for the first time developed an electronic long-term memory cell that can mimic the working of a human brain. These researchers are from the Royal Melbourne Institute of Technology. They have created the world's first electronic multi-state memory cell, which mirrors the brain's ability to simultaneously process and store multiple strands of information, according to the university's press release. The groundbreaking discovery was recently published in the materials science journal Advanced Functioning Materials. This device that they're talking about is 10,000 times thinner than a human hair, and they're calling it a vital step towards creating a bionic brain. They say this is the closest we have come to creating a brain-like system with memory that learns and stores analog information and is quick at retrieving this stored information. This is the project leader and co-leader of the RMIT Functional Materials and Microsystems Research Group talking here. He says this new discovery is very significant because it allows the multi-state cell to store and process information in the same way that the brain does. He says the current devices that are on the market only store data in binary sequences. However, this new nano cell can store information in multiple states because it is analog. So you can see how this is tying right into this driving down the road towards artificial intelligence here. And of course, they're going to say that this is all for the betterment of humanity. They're going to be able to create a bionic brain to allow scientists to help find cures for various neurological diseases, but I think that probably a lot more darkness in that story than we want to talk about right now. What else is going on here? We talked a little bit a couple of weeks ago about the long-range iris scanners. Well, the Carnegie Mellon engineering professor that invented them says that they are now definitely ready and offers a little bit more information about them. And he says that this particular long-range iris scanner can identify someone as they glance at their rearview mirror. Talk about creepy. So in other words, this technology could potentially identify a dangerous suspect, and they're going to talk about how this is, you know, based on police officers and keeping police officers safe. But again, the ability to use this in so many different ways is kind of scaring me. And I'll tell you, Carnegie Mellon, even when they were demonstrating this particular concept, they put together a PowerPoint presentation, and some of them are really creepy. One of them talks about how this shows this girl, and she's got this advanced iris recognition technology with her, and she's looking across a field at a couple that's sitting on a bench, right? And this woman who's sitting here in the foreground says, oh, it looks like Susie's got a new boyfriend, but I don't know who that is. And the advanced iris recognition system chimes in and says, oh, that's Bill Baker. Which, okay, right there on the surface, we're in total creep mode, because what if the gender roles were reversed here? And now you've got a guy who's looking at his ex-girlfriend on a bench, and all of a sudden now knows everything about the guy who she's sitting next to. You can see how this is going to be a very slippery slope towards non-liberty, as far as I'm concerned. But again, they are moving out with that. I forgot to mention a story yesterday, and I'm going to get away from some of the news here right now. There's a lot more health and science stuff at redpillreports.com under the show section. I definitely recommend you guys check that out. But there was something I missed yesterday I really wanted to point out, a really, really cool new invention that this guy invented. It's on Kickstarter, and of course I'm going to draw a blank on what it's called, but it's essentially a drone that you can carry in your pocket, right? And then you have a waterproof tracking little chip that you've got in your watch or whatever. You take this drone up, you throw it up in the air, and it follows you around. It takes pictures, it takes video. So if you're like a snowboarder or something, right, you can start at the top of your run, toss this thing in the air, it'll come down, it takes film in 1080 slow-mo, it'll do all kinds of tricks, it'll go all the way around you. It also automatically switches to slow-mo filming when it thinks you're doing something, you know, amazingly spectacular, and the film quality is amazing. But I just wanted to make a prediction that we are going to see the end of selfies here, guys, and we're going to move on to dronesies, and that's what I think we're going to start seeing on Facebook. So I just wanted to coin that phrase before anybody else did it. Dronesies! That's what we're going to have a lot to deal with here coming forward into the future. But again, I really do like this particular system, because let's say you were not doing sporting events. Let's say you were at a protest and you wanted filming from above. Let's say you get pulled over by a law enforcement officer and can huck this drone out, right? Now it's flying above. It's filming everything. It's hardwired or Wi-Fi'd to your phone and uploading to internet. There is a lot of activist stuff that can be done with a drone like this. So I definitely want to encourage you guys. I'll try and find the link during the break and I'll drop it in the chat room. We are going to go to this break right now. Carl Lehrberger is going to be joining us in just a minute. You guys are not going to want to miss this. He's a fascinating guy and a fascinating story to tell. I will tell you that. So we're going to go to this 3-minute break. I will see you guys in just a second. Love to you all.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR. Did you know that the blue lotus flower was used by the ancient Egyptians as an aphrodisiac to experience feelings of euphoria and ecstasy? And ecstasy. And ecstasy. Did you know that Thai kratom was used by the Buddhist monks to produce a relaxing and dreamlike state? Did you know San Pedro cactus was used by the Native Americans to quest for visions and heal the body? Bouncing Bear Botanicals is your number one supplier of rare and sacred plants and a proud sponsor of Truth Frequency Radio. By clicking on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, you can learn more about a vast selection of entheogens, including Amanita muscaria, also known as a sacred mushroom. So click on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com and and you'll also get up to $40 off your next order.
Archaeology, astronomy, alchemy, secrets of the Holy Bible, hidden codes of the Quran, demonology, Tesla technology, solar power, extraterrestrials in the ancient world. More than 500 documentaries, an experimental film lab of cutting-edge music and art, full-length movies, conference reports, and weekly TV shows. The Enigma Channel is the world's first truly global TV station. www.enigmatv.com. Intelligent television for planet Earth.
Is Truth Frequency Radio.
The wicked ones, obviously under heavy Masonic influence.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys so much for hanging out with us through that 3-minute break. We are moving into the second hour of the program right now, and that is always the hour in which we bring a very special guest to the program. And I'm very excited today to be welcoming the one and only Carl Lehrberger to the program. He wrote a book called Secrets of Ancient America, Archaeoastronomy and the Legacy of the Phoenicians, the Celts, and Other Forgotten Explorers. And ladies and gentlemen, I've put the links up at redpillreports.com under the show section. You can go find this book at newhistoryofamerica.com, and it is absolutely astounding. And if you guys are interested in the ancient alien technology stuff or in some of the stuff like L.A. Marzulli brings to the table, but perhaps you're like me and stuck here in America and can't get down to Central and South America to be looking for elongated skulls, have no fear. Carl Lehrberger has pointed out the fact that there are plenty of things to be interested in here in our country, and that's why I was very excited to be bringing him to the program today to talk about this book and to talk about some of the interesting things that have been told about the history of the America that is just entirely not true, ladies and gentlemen. So first and foremost, let me take a minute to welcome Mr. Carl Lehrberger to the show. Thank you, Carl, for taking some time out to join us on the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast today.
And thank you, JD, for the invitation, and greetings to Red Pill Reports radio listeners.
Oh, absolutely wonderful. We have a lot of people tuned in on the live stream and a lot of people in the chat room. I do want to recommend, if you guys want to have some questions for Carl Lehrberger, you can stick them in the chat room and I'll try and filter them into the tapestry of our interview today. And kind of before we get started talking about this absolutely outstanding book that you've written here, Carl, I want to kind of get into your background a little bit, because your resume is pretty darn extensive, and it comes from really a background of science, which I think a lot of people might find very interesting. And also I want to draw some people's attention to your other websites. One of them is purevisiontechnology.com, and the other one is purehemptech.com. And you're obviously very invested in the hemp industry here in the United States. Do you want to maybe talk about your background a little bit and kind of what's going on outside of the Secrets of Ancient America for just a sec, Carl?
Oh, great. Thank you, JD. And I'd like to, and kind of starting with the new history, if you will, of what I'm doing, it gives a context for everyone to understand why do we even study history and what's the point of it? And if we can't make it relevant in today's world, you know, why bother? Mm-hmm. But I have a 40-year career in renewable energies, beginning with the solar.
Well, we just lost Carl. Hang on one second, guys. Let me see if I can get Carl back on the horn here. Carl, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Yeah, we just had a little bit of a cutout right there. You want to pick it up again?
Okay. So I have a background in renewables. I'm a master garbologist looking at interesting waste streams. But right now, the focus of my work is in biorefining cellulosic biomass. That is green plant matter. Things not like corn stalks, not the starchy corn kernels that we eat, non-food biomass can be deconstructed into the essential biomaterials that form the basis of the new emerging bioeconomy, that is, developing products that are based on biomaterials as opposed to oil. And so this has been a focus of 20 years of work at Pure Vision Technology, which have looked at many different biomasses, including wood, corn stalks and corn cobs, agricultural residues that heretofore have been underutilized and in some cases are waste. And we've got some traction with larger companies, but it's a very expensive game and a very competitive game. And to take advantage of one of the most exciting and emerging biomass streams that are available today is the world of industrial hemp. Mm-hmm. And as many of your listeners no doubt know, that more and more states are now legalized growing of the industrial hemp. And industrial hemp is one of the most incredible plants in the universe. It really is. It provides clothes, food, medicine. We can make cars with it. We can do all sorts of things to replace what we're now getting with fossil. One of the focuses of our technology right now is beginning to work with farmers, specifically in Colorado and Oregon, that along with Kentucky right now are really leading the movement to legalize industrial hemp and all of the products that you can produce from it, which currently are coming mostly from Canada and from China and
That's right.
Europe. So it's really an agricultural and industrial revolution that is now beginning to take place. And I have to share with your listeners that when you do go to a marijuana friendly and an industrial hemp friendly state, it's like a different world. There is such an explosion.
I like to call it civilization.
There's just such an explosion of excitement, whether you're a farmer in the agricultural end of it, or you're a processor, or you're taking materials and producing medicines and pharmaceuticals and clothing and construction material. And it's just, I think, people that don't have industrial hemp on their radar need to kind of open up to the coming agriculture industrial revolution in this country.
Uh-huh.
So any of the listeners interested in exploring some of the issues of processing in industrial hemp, I'd encourage them to visit our website, purehemptech.com, or of the other feedstocks that Pure Vision is working on to convert biomass into bioproducts at purevisiontechnology.com. Now, the segue, as you pointed out, JD, to the work that I do in the world with a focus on sustainability and renewables and the old history is really a somewhat of bewilderment at the state of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of, you know, technology that we were in this fossil fuel age, and, you know, we have alternatives, you know, ranging from, you know, solar and wind and energy conservation and efficiency, and even new technologies that have been held under the table, mm-hmm. as, you know, your show, you know, often, you know, presents. But, in the search for the understanding this giant contradiction of where we are and we can be, has kind of led me to the new history of America, which is seeing the bewildering contradictions that we find in the historical narrative here in America. And so with that in mind, and taking the many cases that I've found at sacred sites throughout North America and to a lesser extent in Central America and South America, I set out to discover a new history of America to try to resolve this contradiction of what I was seeing in the literature and other researchers and then in the last 15 years, actual artifacts of old world peoples that have come to America, left their marks in stone, left their stories, left their symbols, yet the prevailing archaeological narrative and the historical narrative is that, you know, Columbus discovered America. Hmm. And you know, we're now seeing some cracks in that, and you might get some, you know, concession that, oh, well, perhaps the Vikings made it here before Columbus and, you know, Eric the Red made it here. But the current narrative that students receive in school and that is taught in the universities is quite contradictory to the evidence that many old world peoples, not just Celts from Europe or the Phoenicians of the Mediterranean or Romans coming across the Atlantic, but also Trans-Pacific cultures from India and Southeast Asia, mm-hmm. you know, made it to the Americas. And the evidence, albeit in some cases scant, taken as a whole, is significant. And I think that I have to mention that no one person could ever attempt to write a new history of America. Most of the citations in the book, the sites that I visited, the evidence that I present is coming from other scholars, researchers that have made the case over many decades and continue to be ignored, so that we still have this current paradigm. So trying to take the kind of the scientific approach, the high road of, you know, let's apply a valuation of the data out there and take a look at it, I concluded that the Celts left the smoking gun evidence here in America that they were here, not just in New England, but in other areas of the country, including Colorado, Oklahoma, and Kansas. And I was fortunate enough to meet teachers that had been studying these sites for 20 years, epigraphers, that is, people who studied ancient languages, archaeoastronomers, that is, people who looked at the archaeology of astronomy, if you will, of the ancients. Instead, wow, of looking down for artifacts, we're looking at the position of the sun and how the position of the sun and the stars affected ancient cultures, and applying these principles using scientific methods, you know, it becomes clear that what I represent in the book is proven that the Celts traveled the Americas thousands of years before Columbus, along with other explorers, and to move to the conclusion, it's time for a new history of America, JD.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know what I really like about you, Carl, and I'll just lay it out there, is that your whole goal in life is paradigm shifting. You know, we're talking first and foremost about the hemp movement in this country. And I just have to go back to the fact, I read a whole bunch of articles last year when Kentucky was trying to kind of get their experimental program off the ground, and the DEA actually confiscated their seeds and it was making it really difficult. Whereas if you look at Canada or you look at China, like the presidents of those countries go to companies that are producing hemp to support them. And I find that paradigm to just be absolutely crazy here in this country, that we are so far behind the curve. I mean, we're 20 years behind the curve at a minimum in this hemp movement in terms of industrialization. And I definitely, people in the chat room are already asking questions about hemp, so we're definitely going to have you back on the program when it comes to that stuff, because I tell people all the time that when there is a gold rush on, just like Mark Twain said, it's the right time to be in the pick and shovel business. And you, sir, sound like you're at the head of some sort of very important pick and shovel type business. So I want people to go out and support you in that, because I'm with you, man. There's nothing that is going to change the fabric of our country more, in my opinion, than getting the hemp industry back here. I mean, you're giving so much power back to the farmers. You get into biomass and they're able to build a tractor out of hemp and then potentially run it on the, on the hemp oil and biodiesel. I mean, it's a brave new world if we allow it to happen. And I really want to just commend you first and foremost for being part of that paradigm shift. And I can see that paradigm shifting mentality comes back over into your scientific outlook on this new history of America. I think one of the things we ought to do before we really get into this book is maybe define some terms. You use a term in this book called diffusionism, which is not one that I am familiar with, and I'm pigeonholing myself as being the ignorant one in the crowd here, but let's talk about that term for just a second, what we mean by that, if you would, sir.
Yes, and thank you very much for referring to me as a paradigm shifter, because at the end of the day, this book and my experiences in rock art all come down to consciousness, and that's really the point of the journey. And waking up from the bubble is essential.
Yes.
If we're going to evolve. So to do that, whether it be in the renewable energy world, specifically with industrial hemp, or whether it be in the historical world, or in the other pursuits and paradigms that are out there, including some scientific paradigms, it's about the consciousness that allows us to shift the paradigm. So in the case of the old history, the term diffusionism refers to the group of people, the group of scholars that believe that culture comes from the outside. That is, that it diffuses from outside of the Americas. And contrary to diffusionism, you have the isolationist or the independent inventionist. That is to say that culture happens independently, for example, the Native Americans learned their archaeoastronomy, and all the stories and bows and arrows and how to do, make arrowheads and stuff, came all from, independent inventions. And it's been this, ideological battle between the independent inventionist and the diffusionist that really define the old history and the new history, because the prevailing paradigm today is that of the isolationist, the independent inventionist. And for whatever reason, and there are many cited, the diffusionist, who believe that old world peoples made it to America, that plants like corn that was indigenous to the Americas diffused to the old world, that there was this diffusion of culture to the Americas, the isolationists oppose this. And we don't see the evidence examined by the independent inventionist. In fact, what we see is the gatekeepers, that this is not credible, this is not to be discussed. What I discovered in my research is that in spite of there being significant evidence, you don't see the independent inventionists that go to these sacred sites where, for example, you find Celtic inscriptions that can be read and reference and a specific archaeoastronomy event that occurs there. And we don't see this kind of archaeoastronomy and epigraphy, that is writing in the stone and petroglyphs that have intentional alignments on specific days. We just don't see the traditional archaeologists, the traditional historians, anthropologists visiting these sites. And some of the most remarkable examples of old world religion can be found in the New World. And it's explained thusly that in the old world, many of the pagan and pre-Christian religions, for example, Mithraism that celebrates the sun god Mithra, uh-huh, prior to Christ, were pretty much wiped out by the church. In some cases, these deities and gods and goddesses have almost been erased from the historical record. But ancient Celts, traveling to the Americas 2,000 years ago, left their mark in stone in Oklahoma, in a writing system called Ohm, or often pronounced Ogam, O-G-A-M, and describing the rituals of an ancient sun-worshipping culture. Now, that's phenomenal in and of itself.
Yes, it is.
But when you see the accompanying petroglyphs and the images that these old world travelers left in Oklahoma, specifically the Egyptian jackal god Anubis and the Persian sun god Mithras and the Celtic fertility goddess Shelah Nagig, these images appear in these caves, accompanied by the writing and most dramatically accompanied by the archaeoastronomy. And so in the case of that I'm citing here in Oklahoma at a documented a location called Anubis Caves, it is on private property, so it's not accessible to the public, but at Anubis Caves we see the some of the most significant archaeoastronomy in the New World that occurs on the equinox at sunset. And the archaeoastronomy, that is the shadow and light interplay with the petroglyphs on specific days of the year, reveal a story. So what we're beginning to see is the language of the ancients. And if you're not looking for the ancient languages and how they saw the cosmos and how they presented the cosmos, such as traditional archaeology, which is, you know, we've got to dig and find an artifact, and if there is no artifact found, they weren't here type of attitude.
Right.
We have to look up, so to speak. And at Anubis Caves, we have this significant archaeoastronomy. And I have to share with the listeners, in the case of the archaeoastronomy, it's not just like you would find at a site in Ireland called Newgrange, where you have the light coming into a very large structure and just striking a petroglyph at the back of a mound or cave. In the case of some of this petroglyphic archaeoastronomy, we actually have picture shows where as the light moves across the panel, interacting with petroglyphs and in some cases interacting with the Ogham Celtic writing, there's a story that emerges. And if some of your listeners are kind of getting tingly now and kind of thinking of Indiana Jones,
yes,
it's less some of that drama. It's kind of like that if you're not looking for the secrets of how the ancients saw the world, we can't grasp it. So it's an exciting time right now in terms of really looking at the paradigm. And but one of the points of writing the book was that there were certainly writers and teachers in the diffusionist camp that are more knowledgeable and more credible than I, and have, you know, the capability to break through the paradigm. But in just about every case, with one or two exceptions, including Dr. Barry Fell, a very controversial diffusionist scholar, none of the diffusionist researchers have been able to break through the paradigm. And you know, the evidence of that is that, hey, open up any National Geographic or go back over the whole history of National Geographic. There will be little, if any, mention of what your listeners have just heard about the Celts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just at one site like Anubis Cave that has been thoroughly documented, but another half a dozen sites with Ogham writing from the Celts and archaeoastronomy, as well as significant chambers in New England, and that some can be seen at a site called America Stonehenge in southern New Hampshire, which was probably one of the largest, if not the largest, Celtic strongholds.
Wow.
And you know, visitors can go to this site and look at what remains, look at the evidence, kind of have a dialogue about why this could or couldn't have been done by Native Americans and really get into the history of it and come to their own conclusions. Well, I just wonder, you know, why National Geographic hasn't ever, you know, done anything on that or any other significant diffusionist topic. So this is about the paradigm and the paradigm shifting with not just individuals, but most importantly, the institutions like the Smithsonian and the universities. And I can't stress enough to our audience today how powerful the gatekeepers are, especially at universities.
That's the grant process, the grant process.
It's the getting the PhD process. It's getting papers published. It's getting tenure. And, it has one of the most significant challenges that new history researchers face, just having a rational dialogue about the subject.
Right.
Is significant. So like your listeners find in other areas for lack of a better word, paranormal, esoteric, topics. We need an open-minded investigation and discussion of the evidence. Now, let's be honest. There has been significant hoaxes and fakes of ancient artifacts in America. And of course, these have made it even harder for, researchers to uncover the past. Having now to really sift through the many frauds that have been perpetuated, for political or religious or just out of being tricksters.
Right.
But that's why five chapters of the book dealt with the Celts and the evidence left in stone and why I believe that's the slam dunk case to prove it. But proving it, is one thing. The other is how to get it out and to open the doors in the university so students and graduate students can pursue diffusionist research. If one were to go to the Four Corners area and look at the Anasazi runes out there in Four Corners like Chaco Canyon in the summer, you know, one would find dozens of archaeologists and scores of graduate students kind of sifting through these, you know, ancient American runes that are from the Native Americans and the ancestors to the Native Americans. Mm-hmm. But go to one of these controversial sites like I'm referring to. I've never seen an archaeologist there. With one or two notable exceptions, including David H. Kelly, who is since deceased, but he was a well-known archaeologist from the University of Calgary, who I believe died in 2011. And he was one of the very few scholars that had tenure that was a diffusionist, and wow, he was a professional epigrapher. Now, go ahead, Jay.
I hate to interrupt you, brother, but we have just gone through that first half hour. We're getting ready to go to our break, and so when we come back, I want to talk more about exactly where we're at right now, kind of this paradigm-shifting mechanism that we're going through right now, both at the institutional level and here in our hearts and minds, and I really appreciate you being here. So we're going to go to this three-minute break, guys. Keep it right here. We'll come back. I want to hear some evidence about the Celts being here and some other stuff.
Hey, Big Mouth. Yeah, you. Listen, I want you to put the word out on the street. Tell your co-workers, your family, your paisanos, that my good friend, Joe Joseph, is doing a good thing here. He's sticking his neck out for me, for Sil, and for all the people in the world. Isn't that right, Sil?
He's part of the family now, Tish.
That's what I thought. So tune in to him right here on Freedom Link, Monday through Friday, exclusively on the Truth Frequency Radio. Yeah, they're watching you. Big deal. They're watching me, too. They're watching everybody. So grow some cojones and give them something to watch and listen to. Make them earn it. Give them paperwork until they choke. That's right. I know you won't let me down. So you're going to put the word out about my good friend, Joe Joseph, right? Good. Now do me a favor and get out of here.
After work, I'm so tired that I want to be left alone to sleep.
Hey, listen to me.
Who are you? I'm you years ago, when you felt healthy and young and everything worked on your body. Do you remember that?
Yes. I wish I felt like that now.
You can feel like that again with a new microplant powder formulation called Iodine Now. It cleans the entire body from head to toe and feeds the body what it really needs. You'll be in a better mood and you'll find more drive in your romantic life. Really? I gotta try Iodine Now and feel good again. It also protects you from radiation, heavy metals, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine, including cancer and most major diseases. You'll be amazed. You can be your own doctor. I want to keep you out of the hospital and off pharmaceuticals. Wow, why are you so nice to me? Because I'm you. You're out of shape, and I need a better-looking future.
Call 888-910-4367. That's 888-910-4367. Iodine Now. Only at MUSA.org.
In an emergency situation, would you drink contaminated water? You could if you had the amazing Life Straw from MyPatriotSupply.com. Life Straw is the most advanced personal water filter available today. It filters contaminated water from almost any source. Life Straw is lightweight and compact, perfect for hiking, camping, or in an emergency like a flood. Life Straw is easy to clean, comes with a one-year warranty, and has been used worldwide since 2005. Get the amazing Life Straw personal water filter at MyPatriotSupply.com. Plus, check out Survival Sea Vault, 20 sea varieties for only $37.95, Tatler Kenning Lids, long-term storable foods as low as $69.95, and much more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Enjoy stress-free shipping on all orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927 or visit MyPatriotSupply.com. That's 866-229-0927, MyPatriotSupply.com, for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence.
Chris and Sericcio, Saturdays and Sundays, Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys so much for hanging out with us through that 3-minute break. I understand we're having a little bit of a feed issue out there, but I promise you guys the archive will be perfect. We have not had any problems with the connection between Carl and I, and very, very excited to have Carl Lehrberger joining us today. Again, the book is The Secrets of Ancient America, and you can go to www.newhistoryofamerica.com to find this book. And again, this is one you guys are going to want to add to your collection, the full-color pictures in it. There's so many pictures in this book of artifacts. It's just absolutely mind-boggling. And so we're breaking down some paradigms today, guys. We are offering a revised edition of the history of the United States, and again, Carl's done such a fantastic job approaching this book from a scientific perspective, and I think that's what gives it so much quality, and another reason I want to recommend it to you guys out there really, really highly. And before the break, we were kind of talking about the paradigm that does exist here in the country and how certain institutions like the National Geographic and also the Smithsonian Institute, basically controlling at a university level anybody who wants to learn about this type of information and basically not allowing them to do so. So Carl took it upon himself to reach out to other scholars and to cultivate a lot of information in terms of actually shifting the paradigm here. And Carl, I'm really fascinated by the amount of attention you paid to the Celts in this one. The Celts to me seem to be kind of like the bread and the butter of this particular book. Do you want to maybe offer us some of the evidence or the best evidence that you've been able to cultivate regarding the timeline of when the Celts got here and kind of what they did when they were here?
Yes, and before I do, I would just like to kind of delve into the word evidence, because it's really critical to this I would call it cultural war that we see in the old history, kind of represented by the Columbus discovered America mythology, mm-hmm. and the new history, which really proposes an open-minded investigation of what really took place here. And when you get into the debates with the archaeopriest is kind of how I've tried to give a face to the gatekeepers, the cultural bearers of the manifest destiny that Columbus discovered America, and it was that what followed was all a good thing. So the archaeopriest or the archaeologist who engage in these debates will say there is no evidence. And what we hear in those words, it really sums up the story of the history, which is we've been lied to.
Yes.
And it's really having to dissect all the evidence, and seeing all the evidence, one realizes that the old history narrative is a lie, and there are many instances of it. And I begin the story of the new history of America talking about Columbus and the Columbus myth. However, as you stated, J.D., a good part of the book of five chapters deals with the ancient Celts in America. And I did that because I felt that the evidence was almost incontrovertible, that if one were to be open-minded and take a look at the evidence, you could only conclude that the Celts were here. And I think the driver for the early Celts coming from Europe across the Atlantic to the New Worlds was gold and silver and minerals, specifically the rich copper deposits of Michigan. And in coming over here, some of these earlier Celts, as well as earlier peoples like Phoenicians, who were the master, sailors and had the largest merchant marines,
that's right,
would come to the Americas for mining and the copper that really fueled the Bronze Age. But it was the Celts who seemed to have established a central base in New England. And as I cited in our last segment, America's Stonehenge in southern New Hampshire near Lowell, Massachusetts, is perhaps the best evidence of their structures and their chambers and as well as monumental archaeoastronomy and how they really track time. And so there's a significant amount of evidence throughout New England in addition to America's Stonehenge, but the many stone chambers that dot the landscape in Connecticut and Massachusetts and New York, that the Celts were quite spread out and explored all the way into the following the rivers into Colorado, Oklahoma, and Kansas.
Wow.
And as I reported in our last segment, there are at least a half a dozen sites where you find the archaeoastronomy. And you find the writing referring to a specific date and a specific event that does occur, that are clearly can be read in a Celtic language. So to me, this was the most significant evidence that I could kind of rest my case saying, our history is a lie. Here is the proof. The Celts were here. They left their archaeoastronomy, they left their culture in the archaeoastronomy and in the writing. But in addition, you know, there are Celtic artifacts, as there are artifacts of other peoples throughout the Americas. We find I think another smoking gun case is not the Celts, but later runic people who wrote in a runic language, the Kensington runestone found in Minnesota that gives a date I think it was 1368. I don't remember the exact date, but it was in the 1300s, and describes the mission and the travelers of these Gothlanders is an example, again considered to be a fraud by the archaeopriesthood. We find hundreds of coins found in pockets, specifically off the coast of New England, washing up on the beaches, at the terminus of the Mississippi River and of other major river systems. But even old world coins, including many Roman coins, have been dug up in Colorado and other parts of the country by farmers. So, this is not just limited to North America. There's extensive evidence, for example, that the Phoenicians made it to Ecuador in a collection that was created by a Father Carlo Crespi, who had a very large art collection that he gathered with from the assistance of natives, but the native people would also bring him these old world artifacts have pictures in golden tablets of Phoenicians and Phoenician writing, and again, why would anyone go to the trouble of faking an artifact out of gold?
Exactly.
You know, it makes no sense. But like almost any spectacular artifact found that would prove the old history, those artifacts are not to be found anymore. We have the articles on them. We have the photographs on them. We have some history about them and the finds, but they have pretty much disappeared, you know, from the historical record as artifacts, as many other artifacts that have come to light, right, including the Grave Creek Stone, which also was a stone found in North America with a Phoenician type writing. We find Roman vases from shipwrecks off both South America and Central America. Mm-hmm. And regarding Hebrew people, Hebrew and pre-Hebrew peoples have left their mark in early Hebrew writing in New Mexico, and later people in using some type of Hebrew influence writing in artifacts found outside of Tucson, which are called the Calalis relics. Now, as you begin to get into artifacts like the Calalis relics, which were included very large lead crosses with Latin writing that describes the history of this group of Roman Hebrews who came to Arizona and founded a community called Calalis. These are very controversial, and as you begin to look at artifacts kind of dug out of the sand, they become less smoking guns. That is why I think that in the case of artifacts, the best the examples we have are the Celts and the stone writing that they did, accompanied by the archaeoastronomy that we can begin to date, mm-hmm, that provide the smoking gun evidence. Now, you know, just to kind of follow through with this, when I often talk to people and they're kind of surprised at the thesis, because they really haven't been, you know, deprogrammed in terms of the old history and the new history, I'll try to introduce the subject by asking them what is their heritage and where did their ancestors come from? And in most cases, if they came from outside the United States, I can make a direct connection between their ancestors, whether they be Japanese or Chinese or people from Southeast Asia or people from India, mm-hmm, people from Indo-Europe like Turkey and Afghanistan, all the Mediterranean countries, North Africa, the Celts from the Iberian Peninsula, we can make the direct connection between their ancestors coming to America, leaving their mark, and really giving us a new paradigm of America. That is, that we have a multicultural history.
Yes.
That it's not that we were discovered by the white Christians and now we live in a Christian land and you know, isn't that, you know, manifest destiny? No. Columbus was last, not first.
That's right.
That the earlier peoples were diverse. And for example, the crews that would come over here, it wasn't like the Phoenicians or the Celts. No, that's how we think of it. But they were multicultural crews that people on that, those ships, coming from the Celts, there were people from North Africa that spoke, and used the Libyan dialects. Hmm. This is exemplified, by a site like Anubis Cave in Oklahoma that not only have the Celtic Ogham writing, that describe, and this is somewhat of a paraphrase quote, this is the hour to celebrate, a bell. And it's talking about preparing for the celebration of the equinox sunset, where the sun god goes into shadow and the Egyptian lord of the night or the god of the dead, Anubis, takes over, and it's all played out. It's described in the Celtic writing, but there's also Libyan writing there as well. So wow. This is indicative that it wasn't like a singular a group. It was a diverse group. Mm-hmm. But I think, this is why, you know, the new history is about celebrating our cultural diversity. But, you know, it's also a segue to this paradigm that, shifter that, okay, so what is the culture, that was left? And, you know, what occurs to me is that even though you see these deities inscribed in stone, like the sun god Mithras, like the goddesses, symbols, we're referring to consciousness. We're referring to the serpent of consciousness, of awakening. And this was kind of the inherent message is left in stone for us. And again, the relevancy of looking at this.
Boy.
We will find evidence here of some of these old world cultures that have been destroyed in Europe. So it's a great and an exciting time.
I love it.
If we're willing to look at the evidence in a fair-minded way.
Mm-hmm.
And just about every piece of evidence, whether it's archaeoastronomy, epigraphy, artifacts like coins, monumental artifacts like the Kensington Root Stone, relics from Calais, collections of the Crespi collection, vases that have been discovered, Roman vases from shipwrecks from South America and Central America, artifacts that Native Americans possessed coming from the Old World, on and on and on. The evidence is there. You have to open your mind to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And like in so many different areas that your listeners no doubt are familiar with, what we find are this group of archaeopriests or debunkers or gatekeepers. And you know, getting back to how we started this little segment about the evidence, they lie. The truth is there is evidence of that the old world peoples made it to America, significant groups over many thousands of years,
mm-hmm.
and that history has been either covered up, destroyed, or suppressed.
I gotta say, Carl, I think you hit the nail on the head too, because what you were talking about with these different groups that have come over here, that a lot of the evidence that they have left suggests that they were very aware of consciousness in general. And wouldn't it be interesting if that particular facet was one of the main reasons that all of this stuff has been squashed on a level of, the industrial side of archaeology at this point, because they don't want anybody thinking about consciousness expansion. They certainly wouldn't want us thinking that maybe there was a lineage of ancient people that were all a lot smarter than we were, because that would obviously go against the grain of we're the most advanced society that's ever been on the earth, which is obviously clearly not true. But Carl, I want to throw you in a left field for just one quick second for a very quick question. If you had the opportunity to explore either the basement at the Vatican or the basement at the Smithsonian, which one would you choose?
Well, since I probably am not familiar with the ancient scripts that you'd find in the basement, and I'd be looking at a bunch of books and couldn't interpret it, I'd probably choose the Smithsonian.
Right.
That's consistent with, understanding my own limitations as a researcher, and I have gone out and, as an example, gone to the Midwest states and really looked for some of these relics that have been alleged to have been dug out of mounds built by what's referred to as the mound people. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's literature that suggests that there are thousands of relics that come from the old world. So as described in one chapter in my book, I went out and tried to find these relics, did find these relics, held them in my hand, photographed it, and I came to the conclusion, you know, based on, you know, not being an expert, but being able to do some research and finding them, that most of them, nearly all of them that are purported in the literature were hoaxes.
Really?
Now, that's kind of a drag to report, especially to, so many diffusionists and his local historian and new history minded people, you know, that cite these. But unfortunately, that's, what my conclusion was. So I was able to partly come to that conclusion, by holding them, by doing some research on them, by looking at them and having a first-hand experience. Now, obviously, that it takes more than a, you know, amateur going out and looking at something in a museum and sizing up his opinion. Mm-hmm. And this is why the evidence really requires open, fair-minded studies, you know, by professionals that heretofore have been unwilling to look at them because of being tainted as a diffusionist, or you're in the Barry Fell camp of kooks, and, you know, lose their prestige in the academic community. And I just have to emphasize, it's a war out there.
That's
so
right.
So being able to, you know, turn this evidence around and get people to look at it is really the first thing we have to do. But there's some good news out there. And the one is that the whole old history paradigm, the archaeological paradigms are in free fall, that they're just not holding up under scrutiny. And it's obvious that there's a lot of internal discomfort, you know, with how the narrative is playing out.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of the New History of America, one of the most exciting and emerging fields that will, I think, put the nail in the coffin of the old history is DNA studies. And this might be a great segue into, you know, the Native American and
yes,
the ancestors to the Native American part of this incredible story.
That's exactly where I was going next. So let's do that, sir.
But there's emerging DNA evidence that again will conclusively conclude an intermingling of old world genes into some and select Native American tribes. So the paradigm has got, the old world paradigm has got cracks, and writing the Secrets of Ancient America, I hope by lending my voice that it's just going to help us kick the ball over and help break the bubble that really is blinding us.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad you brought up the Native Americans too, because for me it's just the audaciousness of us suggesting that, you know, we discovered this country where there happened to be, you know, a couple hundred million people already here seems to me pretty ridiculous. But I'm wondering how the Native Americans kind of fit into all of this in terms of timelines and things like that, and what you've discovered in terms of interactions with their cultures and some of these other cultures coming over.
Well, this is a huge topic, and we're just going to kind of broad stroke touch upon some of the important aspects, and
okay,
you know, including the one, you know, that you just mentioned. But I found great difficulty in the book talking about Native Americans in general, and I think that's a flawed way of really examining the topic. That instead of the Native Americans, or instead of the ancestors to the Native Americans, you know, we have to be very specific, because there are so many different tribes, so many different traditions, and even within some of the Native American groups like the Cherokees, there's different bands that have, you know, different traditions. And the same is true of the Mayans. People talk about, oh, the Mayans this and the Mayans that. Well, no, there are there are many different Mayan groups. They're tied together, you know, by language, but some of them speak a little different language. They're tied together by the calendar, the Mayan calendar, but even that is set up a little differently by some. So by having these broad generalizations about, you know, the Native Americans is not the path that I chose.
Okay. Okay.
And I don't think that the New History of America challenges the idea that ancestors to many of the Native Americans came across the Bering Straits, came down from Canada, and we've all heard that story, and that's the basis of some of the diffusion of these groups. But what is left out of that narrative is that beginning very early on, we find migrations, explorations, and even settlement by peoples coming across the Atlantic and across the Pacific. So, you know, it really raises so many questions. Well, what happened to these people?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can visualize that over time, these voyages and these migrations were driven by cataclysmic events, by weather events, by political events, especially, you know, in India. And coming over here and attempting settlements, sometimes these old world peoples, you know, would come and go, for example, in doing mining, here, and they would have interactions with Native Americans and ancestors to some of the Native American groups, and would leave, for example, their symbols, citing, as an example, the swastika that we find as a predominant symbol in some of the, you know, Pueblo groups. And so there was some contact. They left the symbols. You know, they didn't share the secrets of metallurgy, but perhaps they did share some of the stories, some of the symbols in exchange for the work and some of their technology. But in other cases, these old world peoples really were at war with the ancestors, the Native Americans, and were wiped out. And in other cases where you have the migration of old world peoples here coming to an end with political occurrences in the old world. For example, when the Romans were able to conquer the Celts, one of the first things they did is destroyed their navies, and that really left the Celts that were over here somewhat stranded for hundreds of years. So they, you know, at some point kind of got tired of waiting, you know, for the return voyage. They
right.
had to move on, and I think what happened in so many cases is what happened with some of the French fur traders that, you know, came in, you know, in the 15 and 1600s, that they became integrated into a tribe and lived their life, and their children became, the people of the Native Americans. And this scenario provides more evidence that it's not just the Native Americans. No. There are very many different tribes, there are very many different traditions, and there are different influences. So where you might find a band of Cherokees that has, you know, Ashkenazi, Hebrew or Mediterranean genetics in their blood, you will find many other Native Americans that don't have any of that, and that they have a different tradition.
Wow.
So this is a very important aspect that we can't generalize.
Now, we can't get into it any further, Carl, because we're out of time, brother. That was the whole hour. I mean, absolutely amazing insight. I want you back as soon as humanly possible for both hemp and this particular topic, because we didn't even talk about the Templars. We didn't talk about pirates. We didn't talk about anything really, that we could go to a lot of different places with this. But Carl, thank you so much for coming onto the program today. Please, ladies and gentlemen, go check out his book, newhistoryofamerica.com. Carl, thank you once again for being here today.
Thank you very much to newhistoryofamerica.com, and I look forward to coming back, JD.
Oh, man, you're going to be back in spades, brother. I can tell you that right now. Ladies and gentlemen, that is it for the hour. We are done for the day. Tomorrow, Andrew Gause will be...
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information without the hate, hype, and fear. We are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Sheree Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call into your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUTH.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.